Accession number 17965, Sergeant Major Frederick Beadle, Reel 6.
Sergeant Major Beadle, Reel 6. You're going to tell me what the company commander said to you when you went and said you would like to be considered for promotion.
Yes. It would appear at that time the right thing to do was to make a written application to the company commander requesting that you might be considered as an NCO. This I did, and was then informed that before being promoted to Lance Corporal, I would have to do a course of sorts. So I had to wait until there was a cadre being run within the battalion, which I joined. Having passed the cadre, I was then considered to be promoted to an acting, unpaid Lance Corporal.
What did you have to do on the cadre course? What?
That's going back a long way for me, that course. But we did, obviously, our rifle drill. It was a mixed-up course. It was a bit of rifle drill, a bit of tactics. Bit of battalion drill, company drill, battalion drill, grenades, fire orders. Now that's a particular one. That was a lesson in itself, fire orders. It was given in a particular way, which I'm afraid I couldn't remember now.
Would it be group, range, indication, target, something like that?
Something like that, yes.
Grit.
Yes, you would have a reference point.
Yes.
And you'd go to that first, and then you would tell them where it was situated from there, say, right 2 o'clock.
Yes.
And from there, wherever you want to direct them to, depending on the scenery in front of you, of course.
Yes.
But I was very naive on that course, because I was the only private soldier. All the rest were NCOs, from sergeants downwards. And I found the first time that I was put out in front of a group of men and told them to teach something, for instance, something like the load aim and fire your rifle in the standing position, that I was pretty speechless. So I had to go out and talk to the trees in the evening to get used to talking in the open air and to people.
Who did the instruction on that course?
An officer did that. It was an officer with a small arms instructor. We had one rank in the battalion, and he wore cross rifles.
Yes.
On his right arm, above his stripes. Now, I can't remember the exact rank they gave him, unfortunately, but he was the man for a rifle, and he was the man to teach you whatever you wanted to know about a rifle, in the same way as they had people for the Lewis gun, people for the machine gun, and so on.
How long did it last?
That course, I can't remember that one again. I don't know, 2 or 3 weeks, I suppose it must have done. But offhand, I can't remember.
When you were made temporary acting, unpaid Lance Corporal, did they move you to another section?
Good echo. No, I think I stayed in the same section. Again, it's going back a long way. That was in 1932.
Did it have a dramatic effect upon your way of life and thinking, being promoted to Lance Corporal?
It was a bit dodgy to start off with, because obviously, being with the same people who I'd been friends with for a couple of years, to get out in front of them and teach them something, if they did say it wrong, blasting them, it caused a bit of friction, really, to start off with. But it was a case of overcoming it, I suppose. On reflection, now you ask that question, it might have been better if I'd been made a section commander in another platoon rather than stay in the one I was in. But that's what it did.
Was there anything you could do to overcome that natural friction that occurred?
Don't think there is, unless you, as I say, unless you put them into another company or another platoon. In my time with the battalion, I served in every company except the machine gun company. You didn't stay static all the time. You went to wherever you was needed, but most, I suppose.
Going back to RASMAC, you were approaching RASMAC and you were marching from Banu.
Yeah.
Had route marching been a regular, normal part of your training up to that point?
Oh, yes. Yeah. After all, light infantry, they're supposed to be marchers, aren't they? And we did quite a bit of marching, but I suppose, on reflection, we could have done more. In a place like India in those days, you were a bit restricted as far as that was concerned, in as much that for most of the year, all your training is done between reveille and midday. You did nothing in the afternoon.
When you did go out on route marches, roughly what distance would you be expected to do in a day?
Well, on one occasion we did do 23 miles, I think it was, with an attack at the end of the marching. That was when we were at our annual camp. But on the normal route march, anything up to 15 miles. The route march order, as you probably know, is 50 minutes march in and 10 minutes rest right the way through.
How many route marches a week would you do normally on a routine training week?
If you're going to put it over a period of time, I suppose it'd work out to about one a week, if that.
Do you think that was enough to keep people...
No, on reflection, no. Could have done more.
But did you have any casualties due to trouble with feet on the way up to RASMAC?
Well, you always had casualties on route marches, particularly with bad feet. We did have a few casualties, but we were followed up with an ambulance, followed us up there, so there was always somebody looking out for them. But the feet were really well looked after, in as much that when you went on a route march, when you arrived back in barracks, one of the first thing you do is to you sit down in your three or four ranks or however many ranks you were in, you take your shoes and socks off, and your company commander or your platoon commander come round and inspect your feet. So they were inspected quite frequently. But of course, if you start a blister on a march, there's nothing they can do about it. You've got to put up with it.
Is there anything you could do to harden your feet to marching other than just marching? Any precautionary measures you could take?
Always a clean pair of socks for a start, I suppose. It's one of the first things to do. And some of the lads used to wipe soap on the sole of their socks, which I couldn't see any purpose in doing, because if you've got sweaty feet, you have a boot full of lather. But... I found it all right. The only time I ever got blisters on my feet in the battalion was when I was recalled at the start of war and went down to Bodmin. I did a march round the Cornish Hills and I got a blister. That was the only time in my service I ever had one.
That was due to new boots, wasn't it?
New boots, you see, you hadn't worn them in.
And out of practice,
That's right.
So you had a 5-day march up to RASMAC. You say that one section refused to go up onto the heights. What happened to them?
Again, the section commander, I don't know if he was a corporal or a lance corporal, he was punished accordingly. He was, as a matter of fact, again, I've got a photograph somewhere where the officer who is charging him is sitting down on the edge of a hole in the ground, and this chap is standing there, and he's laying down the law to him. I think he got reprimanded, I'm sure, what he got at that particular time. But that was the situation. He was still up company office, as it was called.
What sort of punishments did you get if you went up?
Well, if you was an NCO, you would either be reprimanded or you'd go before the battalion commander and you'd be reduced to the ranks. But nothing other than that, really. The private soldier, of course, he'd be on defaulters. which wouldn't make any effect on him at all if he's on the march, would it?
What if you weren't on the march, though? What if you were in barracks? What would happen if you were on defaulters there? What if you were in barracks and you were on defaulters? What would happen to you?
Oh, defaulters?
Yes.
Would you come under the jurisdiction of the battalion... Oh, what am I trying to think of? The police.
Regimental police.
The regimental police. Yeah. And the regimental police sergeant would be your masters for the time you were on defaulters. That would be doing any other job, any job they wanted doing during your period. Pack drill. They used to invent things too, like digging a hole and next day filling it up. All good fun for the people who are bossing you around, I suppose. Well, that sort of thing, really.
Were there any incidents on the way up to Razmak on your approach to it?
No. No, we had a straightforward march up, no bother whatsoever. Not from outside the battalion, but within the battalion, all right. The regiment that relieved us, their RSM was shot at the first camp out of Razmak, Razmak Narai, as it was called. I don't know how true it is, but I can't really believe it, but it was said that he had a tent to sleep the night, and he had a light on in the tent. So he was shot by somebody or the other, nobody knows who.
Did you see anything of the local population when you were on the march up?
Not a lot, really. The camel trains were on the go now and again, but we saw very little of them. And while we were up in Razmak, we saw very little of the civilian population. But again, these camel trains were always going through with people going somewhere or the other, which we didn't know where. In most of the cases, when we were out on exercise, we didn't use the roads anyway. We were marching through riverbeds or anywhere else that would take us where we wanted to go.
What was Razmak like as a post to live in?
Oh, it was all right. It was as good as anywhere else because we were cocooned in there the same as we were in our barracks anywhere else. We had our contractor there who had the cinema, and the contractor had a billiard room for the other ranks and another billiard room for the junior NCOs. We had a sergeant's mess with a billiard room in it, and he had his cinema there. So we had just the same facilities, except that we were in this square mile and you couldn't get out of that, neither day nor night. You had to have permission to go out by day, but nobody ever wanted to.
Was there anything outside that you might have wanted to go and visit?
No, not at all, really. I can't think of anything that any of them would want to go out to see, because all we saw up there was hills and more hills. Every time we went out on an exercise, it was uphills and downhills and along riverbeds. Over and above that, I can't think of anything of interest that anybody would want to see.
And I think you were saying earlier on that Razmak was very well protected.
Yes. Yes, it was. As I said, we had this stone wall fence around it first, which was a built thing of rock. And now that was a very... tough wall that was about 4 feet wide and 5 feet high, which you could stand and fire over with comfort. And going out from there was two lots or three lots of double apron barbed wire fencing. Then over and above that, they had lighting all round over the barbed wire fencing so that if there was an attack, you could switch on the lights and see them coming from that way, making good targets. The protection of the wall physically, each battalion had a piece of wall to look after. And in the event of being attacked, you would go and man this piece of wall. And that particular piece of wall was manned at all times, night and day, by the battalion who was responsible for it. It would be done with a two-on and four-off situation as far as the sentries are concerned. The toilets within the square mile one could use at night but not by day. The day toilets were outside the protective wall of the camp. Now, with those toilets being outside, a party from that part of the wall would be selected each morning to go out and make sure there was no tribal people in the toilets outside. So the thing was to go through, do a lot of banging and shouting to make sure that nobody was in the lavatory.
Did you ever find anybody in there?
No, never.
And were there any attacks on the camp while you were there?
We were very lucky. We were the only regiment that didn't get a Frontier Medal for years. The one before us did, the one behind us did. We were fired on one occasion. We were in camp and it was at night. And we had a few rounds fired at us. The only thing they damaged was a mule, poor devil. So we had to put him down.
What did you do in response? Did you fire back?
No. We were camped on the side of a hill.
Yes.
A bit of a plateau there. And down there was a big ravine going up to a much taller hill at the other side. It was useless trying to fire back to there. You couldn't see where they were. A bit of shrub of that there.
Could you see gun flashes or anything like that? Or could you see the flashes from their weapons at all?
Well, again, I can't say whether we could or whether we couldn't, because it was fired at night. I was probably in bed anyway. But I should think you would see the flashes if you was looking in that particular direction when they fired.
Sounds as though there was a serious risk of attack on the camp.
No.
Well,
no?
No. No serious risk. Was there a risk of theft? Was it that the more important thing?
Well, I don't think so. I don't think anybody would try to get into the camp and steal anything. It'd be too risky. Mm. No doubt about it, although we weren't attacked or anything like that, we were very aware of the fact that we could be. Yeah. And you've got to be on your toes and make sure that you're not called out. Mm. But,
how often did you actually go out into the country?
Almost about every 6 weeks, I suppose. If we didn't go away for a few days out of the camp, we just did a one-day camp, one-day exercise, so that we went out of the camp in the morning, back to the camp at night.
What strength are these? Did you go out as a whole battalion, or did you go out in smaller
scale force? We went out as a brigade nearly every time.
Who was with you then?
Well, we had the Gurkhas, we had another Indian regiment with us, we had an RA section. You've probably seen the RA guns on the mules and that.
Would they be the 3.7?
I don't know much about their guns, but I think you're probably right there.
Yeah, pack howitzer.
Yes. There's Gurkhas, RA. I can't remember who else was with us. But there was four or five battalions. Oh, there'd be four battalions in a brigade, I suppose. I never ever went out on anything other than that. Except the first one when we went with the Gurkhas.
That was for training.
We were within reach of the camp all the time.
Yes.
We just did it round the camp.
What did you do when you went on one of these expeditions normally? One of the... You went out sort of 3 or 4 days. What would the brigade do?
A bit like showing the flag, really. A particular area would be selected, and you would go out and do this particular area. It might be a few houses and that, and they've been having a bit of bother there or something like that. But otherwise, it was showing the flag. In other words, you go out in each direction for so long so that you can be seen by the tribesmen and that up there, and they know you're on your toes. As I said before, we were the only regiment for quite a bit that didn't get a medal, a frontier medal. And we always said they were afraid of us.
That's why they didn't shoot at you.
Pardon?
That's why they didn't shoot at you.
Yes, that was our joke, that was. Was supposed to be.
So you had a number of expeditions, Brigade Scale, and you said you used to move up river beds rather than along the roads.
Yes.
Why was that? Wouldn't it have been easier to move along the road?
A shortcut to where they wanted to get, I suppose. We weren't told important things like that, I'm afraid. It was just point and go. But one particular one on the riverbed situation was we went out to Razmak Narai, and then from there we marched to... Anyway, we went out to Razmak Narai first of all. We had a night there. Got up next day, it was raining, and we marched along this riverbed, and the water gradually got higher and higher. We were still marching. And then we got to this plateau within the peaks of a number of hills, which was Champlain. We called that the Champlain exercise. And we stayed the night there. Everywhere, we were all wringing wet through. It was still raining, about 9 o'clock in the evening. But our protection was ground sheet bivouacs. You know about drowsy. Ground sheet bivouacs, which with my lads I got sorted out. And we laid in there, and you could feel the water running under your side. But much to my surprise, I woke next morning, and there was about 6 inches of snow on the ground. It was that sort of situation.
What was the health of the battalion like under those conditions?
Extremely good. Extremely good. Yeah, I would say that the battalion has never been so fit as it was up there. To be fit is a lovely feeling. And I will never forget how fit I felt after the period up there.
When you went out on such an expedition with brigade level... What distances could you cover in a day if you were marching to show the flag?
Well, you could cover 15 miles. 15 miles is a long way to march with... You have fighting order, a rifle or what have you to carry with you. But 15 miles is a good time. The farthest I've ever marched in one day was... We did an exercise and we marched... It was 23 or 24 miles. When I say marched, it was running and marching. And we did that in 5.5 hours, finishing up with a couple of mile attack against the band who had taken up defensive positions, which fought our way back into our camp again. So we'd gone round in a massive big circle, in effect. Now, we had quite a lot of chaps fall out on that. But most got through, of course.
That was a forced march, really, wasn't it?
That's right.
Yeah. Did you? I mean, was this the only occasion you did a forced march, or did you do them?
No, that's the only occasion I can remember of doing a forced march.
Were you in any particular order or formation for these marches through the hills when you were going up into tribal territory?
Marching through the hills again, you would have the picketing company would be at the front of the column. Under the picketing commander, and they would point out different heights. They'd have a thing like a rifle, which you looked along the sights and you pointed at the particular space you wanted to go.
Yes.
And over the other side, there'd be another pointer arranged so that it's pointing at the same thing as you're looking at, and the NCO looks over your shoulder along that one, and you can see the same sight as you're seeing.
Yes.
And you're told to go up there and picket that. So you'd have this column coming through, picketing the heights as it went along, which made it very slow going, of course.
Did you march in the afternoons as well when you were in the hills?
We did there, yes.
You did?
It was all right there, you see. I mean, the temperature was a lot different to what it is on the plains.
It sounds to me as though the pickets would have been a considerable risk because they would be isolated from the main body, wouldn't they?
Absolutely,
up on the high
yes.
ground.
Yes, the column would go through, you see. Get that straight. And right in the rear of the column, they would have the bugle major used to do this with a flag, and he had signals that he could give you to recall you to the column. And the picket commander, the NCO and 12, he would have the sight pointed out for him. He would get his lads together and go to this particular site, climbing all the time because it's taking the heights away from the road or riverbed. And the drill was you would march up there in extended line and you'd get to within about 20 feet of the site, halt, fix bayonets, and charge that last bit. If anything goes wrong up there, you're not to move, you give signals back to the column about this. For instance, on one occasion, I got halfway up to a site and one of the lads dropped out. He was in a bad way. He was all in, there was no doubt about it, physically. So I had to make him sit still. I had to cover him with the chaps I'd got around protection. And fortunately, I could do use a bit of semaphore, and I semaphored back to the column that had got this chap. We hadn't gone up to our height, do something about it. So they sent some chaps up to bring him down, and we carried on with our column. So everything was catered for, but all a bit, bit slow, really.
Yeah.
Lots could happen before anybody could get to you. So you didn't muck about at all. You was on your guard. There was no doubt about it.
You say you were in fighting order. What would you be carrying if you were in fighting order on a picket?
Now, we might have gone in with a full pack. I just wondered if we did full pack up there or whether we did fight. Fighting order is haversack on the back. Water bottle,
pouches.
Ammunition pouches, bayonet, and in the haversack you had your housewife with a knife, fork, spoon, razor, comb, lather, brush, buttons, stick, and button brush, all wrapped up, pair of socks, change of underwear. Clean shirt. Oh, and up there, a pair of chaplains.
What are chaplains?
Chaplains are a sandal. And they had soles on them, same as an ammunition boot, with all the steel studs and toe caps and have you. But they were lovely and comfortable. And when you got in after a march, you could take your boots off and put your chaplains on, to get some air around your feet and ease them a bit.
How much ammunition would you carry?
I can't remember what we carried. Obviously we carried some, but what we carried I can't remember.
And when you did a picket...
I got a feeling that we had two lots on either side, which would have been 40, 5, 10... 20, sorry. 20.
When you went on picket, did you have a Lewis gun with the section, or were they all armed with rifle?
No, we didn't have a Lewis gun on picket. Too cumbersome, too risky. I think the tribes would get onto that one pretty sharp. You'd lose mule, guns, men as well. No, it was all rifle.
Apart from your chap who was exhausted, do you remember having any other casualties on going on picket?
No. Only my own casualty. When I got to Razmak Marai, and we'd still got a bit of marching to do to get to Razmak, I got the tummy ache because I hadn't been to the toilet for a couple of days. So as soon as I arrived in the camp, I went to the hospital and was sorted out from there. But, otherwise, no.
Did you have any other trouble while you were Razmak?
No.
Do you have any idea what gave you that constipation?
Well, I know what caused it. I know what gave it to me.